Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. With me, as always, are Rachel Malcolm and Chris Patterson. And our special guests today are Scotland star Chloe Rowley and Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend and Scotland defence coach Steve Tandy.
You almost forget what you're doing. Like, at sevens, you can end up defending like 15s, and that's completely wrong.
Well, I actually found out a long time ago. So
I was on the zone with Gregor. I had a bit of a panic. So I just got to go. I got to go quickly. I don't think I managed to hit mute.
So joining us on the podcast now is Scotland star Chloe Rowley. Chloe, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm happy to be back here. Just back in camp now for the Italy game. So just getting ready and prepared to play that on Saturday.
Back at Scotland as well, obviously. A home game, obviously, the first game of the Six Nations was down in England. But, you know, it's a long time in coming. But you must be delighted to be back on home soil, albeit without any fans. But at your home base in Scotland, ready to take on the Italy, who are tough to beat down. You know, they're really, really kind of hard working team, but you've got to be confident at home with the developments and skill and all the work you've put in that we can be really confident ahead of this weekend.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think, like, as a team, we're happy that we're back at Scotstoun. Like, you know, as you say, it is our home ground and it's where we've been for the last couple of years. And I think, yeah, the work that we've put in and like the development we've made over that time, I think we're ready to show that this weekend. I think we're all ready to, you know, to show what we've been building on, what we've been working on. We're very excited to be back here. It kind of feels a bit more comfortable, a bit more, you know, like homely kind of thing.
What do you expect to see from Italy? We've obviously played them quite a few times in recent years and results have kind of gone back and forth a little bit. What do you reckon we're going to see from Italy this year?
I think Italy are going to be very aggressive. They always are. They're a very, like, hard ball carriers and their backs are very quick and just really off the cuff rugby. Like, literally with Italy, you don't know what you're going to get. Like, one minute they can be playing structure, the next minute they'll just be doing whatever they want to do, which is so hard to play against. But like I said, I think we are definitely ready for that challenge. Like, we have been working on that in training. Like, we've been working on, like, if something doesn't go our way, what do we do from there kind of thing. So no, I think they're definitely really, really aggressive. So we need to front up to that. And then, yeah, I think our backs just need to stay focused in defence. And, you know, I think we'll be good with that.
They played at England last week, didn't they? And were beaten, you know, convincingly in the end. But they take a lot of breaking down. And as you say, I suppose the focus for you has to be on your own game rather than their game, because it is quite erratic, because it can be really difficult to play against. You've just got to trust the hard work, trust the conditioning, and realise that, you know, I suppose the positives may take a long time to come against a team that are, as you say, they have that sparkling ability, but they're a tough, tough team to break down. And that's easier when you've had a run of games. I think that's easier when you're up to the swing of things. Obviously, played 2 weeks ago, no game last week. But is there a level of confidence that when things do go against you a wee bit, or things are really, really tough, you can just stick to these structures that you've been working so hard with?
I think, yeah, like against England, we take that as a learning. You know, maybe things didn't go to plan and we maybe panicked a bit about that. But I think this week we are focusing on us. Like, we're focusing on what we're going to do in those situations. So, like, the first 20 minutes, we know that it is going to be really hard. And like you say, to break Italy down, it's going to, like, take all our focus, which will be, you know, first 20 minutes kind of just like pretty much weather the storm, take what they've got, give what we've got, and then just go from there. I think definitely just focusing on us and just taking it as it comes.
You take a little bit of, like, I guess looking at how Italy played against England, you know, Italy very much were kind of in the ascendancy in that first half, and England kind of just bided their time a little bit and almost waited for them to make mistakes. Do you think when you play against a team like that, that is a little bit kind of erratic, it's all about just having that patience and almost the focus goes on turning defence into attack rather than, you know, necessarily playing a kind of more structured game, if that makes sense? So almost trying to play off the mistake.
Yeah, like, I think for us, like, we need to kind of, if we let them play, they will play and they'll play and play, like, for as many phases as they want. You know, we kind of want to put pressure on them but also like stay in our systems. Like we want to, you know, work to what we've been working with and not make it loose like they, like we don't want to play like them. We want to play our way, which is to put them under pressure and yeah, like just let them, not let them do what they want. Yeah. Because like I said, if you do, they will build the phases. We kind of want to shut that down and then like, you know, play what we play, like, you know, turnover ball, whatever, we'll go from there.
It's so difficult, is it? Because I think you're right, Rachel. You almost have to be quite instinctive against a team like Italy. But if you try and win it on your own, or if you jump at the system like Chloe's saying, almost it's a catch-22. And I think it's much easier to play instinctively when you've played a run of games. But we keep saying the lack of games that you've been able to play as a squad makes that difficult. So it does come down to trust. It comes down to trusting, A, the systems and the processes you're working on, but B, also being really reactive to someone in your team having a go from a turnover, getting that support play right, making sure you're in the right position. Communication's key as well, especially when you've not had, you know, a lot of game time together. So it's a difficult challenge, adding the pressure of playing at home, adding the pressure of coming off a defeat against England. It's a big challenge, but it's an exciting one to be part of, Chloe, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, we're ready for that challenge as well. Like, you know, we played England a couple of weeks ago and we were disappointed with the result and disappointed with our performance, which I think is a good thing to take away from that game. You know, if you're disappointed, it obviously shows that we were, you know, we were trying to do what we wanted to do and we never quite pulled that off. But yeah, I think definitely like just kind of, again, focusing on us and, you know, playing what we want to play.
How will you deal with it? Rachel obviously picked up an injury early on against England. What's your Saturday afternoon viewing like? Will you get, because you'll know, obviously, you'll know what they're trying to do, when they're trying to do it, you'll ins and outs of it, you'll be, you know, hugely missed. But how's your emotion and your, I suppose, nerves going to be in Saturday afternoon?
I actually think they'll be worse. I think, you know, like, I'm someone who gets quite nervous before I play, but as soon as, like, the first whistle goes, like, it's all gone and I'm just, like, enjoying it. So the fact that first whistle for me is not going to go, I'm just going to be a bag of nerves and emotion, I guess, for the whole time. But I've got every faith in the girls that they'll go in and put a good performance. So, yeah, I'll try and keep it contained as best I can.
And Chloe, there's been a change. We've seen Brian Easton's come in as head coach. So just a little bit on that transition. And what's the kind of mood like in camp? And what's it been like working under this new management?
I think the mood in camp's been great. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like I said, we've got the defeat against England, but people have came in almost with a fresh mind. Like we're kind of, you know, we are ready to go. We're ready to play Italy. We are, you know, like you say, we haven't had many games before this. We've just literally had the England game and it was a big gap. But we're ready to go. And the coaching team are amazing. Like, you know, they're so passionate. They want us to do well. They're putting all the little details in that we need, like from after games or even from training, like straight away, like the footage is up on Huddle and there's always little conversations going on in camp, which is amazing. Like compared to when I first started, it was almost like you just kind of shut off that and you just play the game and that was it. But now it's like I say, the detail in it and the clarity within the team is amazing. The clarity from what the coaches want from us and almost what we want from the coaches as well. And, you know, in different systems, different plays, different areas of the pitch, everything like that. So I think the clarity is really helping us as players.
We've got quite an interesting combination of coaches now, don't we? There's a lot of,
yeah.
I mean, Tyrone Holmes, who leads our defence, is very much the butt of every joke from our coaches' point of view. But as players seem to be the only ones that have his back. But no, they're a good mixture, for sure.
Yeah, you've got Tyrone who wakes up 6:30 in the morning. The first thing he's talking about is defence. He'll come down to breakfast.
Literally at breakfast.
Yeah, he's pulling you aside with a clip about what you've done in training or what happened in the game. Why did that happen? And then you've got Brian like, let's just chill out. Everyone just chill. Like, just go away tonight and just calm down.
Ross is a happy medium. Sometimes he's at 100 and then sometimes he's pretty chill. So you just need to get him on the right days.
I don't think I've ever experienced a defensive coach that can switch it. I think it's a mentality, isn't it? They almost have to be the most aggressive and in your face and... I don't know, but I mean, Tyrone played like that as well, and I know you've both said before how influential and how good he is in the technical kind of hands-on as being a recent retired pro player himself. And, you know, that's one thing, but it's the energy and the aggression and the desperation that these defence coaches bring that it's infectious.
We were in camp the other week and we were about halfway through the defence over at Tyrone and his top was ringing, was wet. I was like, it was like we're in Orium and it's like honestly like an icebox in there at the best of times. He was sweating profusely because he's just so in it. Like, I actually think he gets more into it than his players, which is amazing. But like Chloe said, he just doesn't know when to switch off from.
I hope it doesn't listen to this.
We all joke about it and he takes the joke, so it's quite, he knows what it's like. He just can't help himself.
We love it though, we absolutely love it.
It's
been brilliant. Quick one on the squad this week. A change in the back three. So you've got Liz Musgrove on your wing this week alongside you. So what do you think Liz brings? Obviously, she's been out with a pretty traumatic injury for a fair while. She came off the bench really well against England and quite rightfully so got her start this week. So what do you think Liz brings to the team for this week?
I think Liz is like, obviously she has been injured for that long time, but she's very like experienced. She's got a good rugby brain on her. And I also like, as a 15, I can rely on her being there. If there's a high ball, it's good because she's always talking. She's always connected. She's always telling me where she is or what she wants, which is amazing. And she's got unreal speed. Like, you know, if you give her the ball, she's going to go. You know, there's no hesitation about her. She just goes. And that means that other people around her also know that they can get with her, you know, support her, whatever, get those offloads and stuff. But no, I'm really excited to work with her again. Like, I do feel very comfortable when she's there. She's a very good player.
She defended really well when she came off the bench in England as well, didn't she? Because, you know, there's times where kind of faced a lot of possession against you. We had to defend quite a lot, especially for maybe kick chase or turnover. It's hard on that edge. And Chloe, you know as well, being at 15 or like how much space you have to cover quickly. So therefore your position and decision making is really important. I thought like her experience showed when you're almost, sometimes you don't have to make a tackle if you're in the right position. You can force the attack to do something. And working together with Megan's got a lot of experience in that and speed as well in that back three. So that's an important part of the game.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think she was really impressive when she came on, like you say, in their defence. Like, you do know that her position is really good and she will make that tackle. She'll get there, or she knows, you know, when there's a system change in defence, she knows when it's on and when it's not on to fly or to sit, which is, it's really helpful, as you know, like, as being a fullback, knowing when to close the gate or when to sit back. So, yeah.
Will Italy kick quite a lot, or will they try and keep ball in hand?
No, I don't think they'll kick much. I don't think they'll kick much. If they do, it will literally be off the cuff. Like, I don't even know if they'll know they're going to do it. I think they'll just do it.
It's quite a difficult one to defend against sometimes when you play it. Because with England, you know, if they're in their half after one, two phases, they're going to kick. So, you know, you almost set up for that pressure. But with Italy, you, as soon as wherever you are on the pitch, you've always got to change defensive systems, because you know they will look to attack from anywhere. Like Chloe says, it's always off the cuff, not something you can necessarily have as clear cut a strategy for as you might do against other teams.
And do you like that kind of unstructured, maybe unstructured is the wrong term to use, I'm speaking to three rugby experts here, but do you like that kind of, you know, we see you with ball in hand, Chloe, you seem to, you love the kind of having space and time to run at attack. Will you, if there's not a kicking game then, will you see less of that and have less opportunity to try that out at the weekend, or will you find that in other ways?
No, like I'll definitely go and like hunt for the ball, as they say. Like, you know, I'll go and look, you know, just for little offloads, or even just get myself in the line more. I think just trying to get the ball as much as I can. Like, and if they do kick, they sometimes will. Like, maybe if they're under pressure, and that's the perfect opportunity for me then to kind of attack against their like almost unstructured or unorganized kick chase. So that's a great opportunity, as you say, like for me to attack then.
Now, if we switch back to the domestic game, you know, you're both involved in the Premier 15s, you know, had a quick look at the table there. So, you know, Rach, I think you're fourth just now, a few points behind when Harlequins are up in second. I don't want to start any more rivalries between the two of you, but...
we're saving it for the playoffs, don't worry.
Quite right, quite right. So how's it going to work for you guys then, Chloe? You know, you're up in camp just now. You're involved in the Scotland setup, but there's obviously quite a lot going on now. That, you know, we've had a year almost of no rugby, and now it seems to be quite relentless. So you're involved in the Scotland stuff. You're also involved in the GB sevens and Harlequins. So just talk us through what your schedule or what you perceive it to look like over the next couple of weeks and months.
So obviously the next couple of weeks is Six Nations, which I'll just focus on Scotland 15s, and then I think I've got like maybe 2 days off at home down in Jedburgh with the family, and then I'll drive down to Loughborough where I'll go straight into GB7's camp again, and we're looking to be training for a couple of weeks and then hopefully get some kind of like tournament set up, so I'll literally like be in camp Mondays till Thursdays, and obviously if there's a tournament I'll be in all week, but if I'm not in at the weekend I'll then go down to Harlequins and I'll be back in there from the Thursday night until the Sunday, and then again just back into GB on the Monday till the Thursday, so yeah, it's pretty full on, like you say, like I didn't have much rugby at all and now it's flat out like exhausted, but like, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love to train, I love to play, I love to be in all these setups with, like, you know, amazing players, amazing coaches and great setups, so I'm enjoying it so far. Like I said, exhausted, but no, I love doing it. So,
how do you find, like, mentally the switching between sevens and 15s? I mean, I have zero sevens experience, so I don't know a huge amount about the game. But in terms of obviously having to switch between how you play in sevens to how you play in 15s, how do you find that? Is it must blow your mind some weeks.
Oh yeah, it is difficult. Obviously, with playing for Scotland, we've always kind of done 15s and then straight into sevens. So like, that transition's not too bad, but it's the coming from 15s into 7s and then back into 15s straight away and then back into 7s. Like, it is crazy. Like, you almost forget what you're doing. Like, at 7s, you can end up defending, like, 15s and that's completely wrong. They're completely different. So, no, it's difficult. It's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But it's not too difficult. It's not like, you know, I'm not making mistakes all the time because I can't remember how to defend here or how to attack here. It's a bit difficult for me as well because in 15s, I obviously play fullback, but in 7s, I play 9. So they're very different, like set piece wise. So yeah, switching from them and remembering what I have to do where is difficult. But like I say, it's manageable. I can kind of almost a day of being in 7s, I almost switch. Like, it switches, the switch switches, and then, yeah, coming back up here. I think the focus of getting into camp, like GB camp, and forgetting almost about what game you just played 15s, like forgetting about what went wrong in that game and how you can fix it, and almost like just focusing on 7s and what you can do in that session rather than thinking, oh, I need to look at this game and I need to review it. And the same way coming up here, like I came up here, you know, a couple of days before coming into camp, and even in the first day of 15s camp, I was still thinking about 7s, like how I could do this better, or how I could run this line better or whatever. So that's difficult. But yeah, again, it's manageable.
Made even more complicated by the players you're playing alongside and the players you're training against and vice versa with the two teams as well. Playing, you know, against some of the English women, for example, last week and then training with them in the week in between the GB7 squad, as you say, it's pretty confusing. I take my hat off to you because there's a lot going on. But when does the GB stuff kind of culminate in terms of selection? Or you said they were hoping to get some tournament played. Has any of that been finalised ahead of the Olympics?
Yeah, so the final team is selected in around the end of June for Tokyo, to go to Tokyo. But the wider training squad of 19 players will still train as like a group, just to kind of, you know, give the 13 that are going like defence to run against or whatever. So it's kind of still full on even after June until like they head off to Tokyo. But yeah, just
brilliant opportunity though. Brilliant opportunity either way to develop.
100%. Yeah.
Well, we wish you all the very best in the Six Nations and the Premier 15s and the GB 7s as well, Chloe. And hopefully we'll get you back on in a few weeks' time and you can give us more insight into what your life looks like and how it's all panned out from here. But I'm proud to have you on the podcast. Best of luck this weekend against Italy and the Six Nations and hope all the GB 7 stuff goes well as well. So, cheers. Chloe, really, thank you very much.
Cheers, Chloe.
Thanks, Chloe.
Cheers.
Well, delighted now to be joined on the podcast now by Scotland defence coach Steve Tandy and Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend. Straight off the news that they will both be featuring in the upcoming British and Irish Lions tour. First of all, huge congratulations to you both. And Gregor, I'll come to you first if I may. Must be absolutely delighted with that news. Just talk us through, I guess, how you found out and what your emotions and feelings were when you got the call.
Well, I actually found out a long time ago. So at the time, I was obviously delighted and buzzing about the thought of working with all these fantastic players, being a part of a unique setup. Something's really special. It was really special to me as a supporter and a player, and then to do it as a coach is amazing. But that was back in November, December. In the last 3 or 4 months, there hasn't been much communication. I think we feared that the tour might not go ahead or it was going to be in a different form. And obviously the Six Nations was the key priority for all my thoughts. So really just the last 2 weeks of getting confirmation that the role is still there and we're going to South Africa has been great news. And even better news is that Steve's going to be involved too.
And Steve, I guess you maybe didn't get as much notice as Gregor did. You were saying earlier on, you found out, I think, was it last Wednesday you got a phone call? Just talk us through the process for you.
Yeah, last Wednesday, phone call from Gats about Rapistree. I was on Zoom with Gregor, had a bit of a panic. Says, just got to go. I got to go quickly. I don't think I managed to hit mute by the time I left either. So, yeah, it wasn't my finest moment, I don't think. So I spoke to Gats and he asked me, would I like to go? And yeah, it's just an unbelievable feeling. And feel very privileged to be part of something so historical. And yeah, and just something you grew up watching, like in particular 97. I'm obviously much younger than Gregor, so seeing him play in those when I was younger, I might not look it, but yeah, those experiences you think of and those memories, and to be part of it seems pretty surreal, if I'm honest.
It must have been a coaching goal for you both, I assume, because it's so prestigious. But Steve, I mean, because you've had a short notice and you're relatively early in coach, I know you spent a few years as head coach of Ospreys from probably early 30s, mid-30s, so you kind of developed this head coach role at quite a young age. You spent time in Waratahs in Australia. But, I mean, it must still be a shock when such a young man, you've got this wonderful opportunity to coach a lot of these players that you would have played alongside and worked with in different forms. But I suppose what I'm trying to say is it a real shock to you?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not some of the things, probably as you could tell, not some of the things too far ahead. Just more concentrated on the present moment and being part of something, being lucky enough to be part of the Scotland team. You just want to make that the best you can be every day, and being around special group of players and a great environment, I think allows you to hopefully thrive. And I think I've been very fortunate in the Waratahs environment. I learned loads of the Ospreys and I've had the chance to reflect on a lot of what I did back then and how you can sort of critique yourself and hopefully get better. And then as the environments, you get more intense, you look at international rugby, I feel I've learned so much. And even from the time I arrived in Scotland and just learning and the adaptation and how the boys have responded to what we've tried to do, and they've played a major part in me being able to get this opportunity. So there's massive gratitude to the way the players have bought in and how the whole environment has helped, whether it be linking to the gym and the staff have been absolute class. So probably to answer your question in a very long-winded way, I had never really thought about it. I'm generally more about being present and what I can deal with now and hopefully make better. So probably no. And then when that sort of rumour starts hit then, and then when it did come, yeah, that's right. Probably it feels so surreal because it's something that I've never really thought that would come to someone like myself, probably.
Oh, it's massively deserved with the, you know, certainly all the work you've put in and the last couple of years. And Gregor, you had the really tough decision 4 years ago to turn down an opportunity with the Lions just as you took over reins as head coach of Scotland, and which I think was the right decision. And having that opportunity again 4 years later must be really special.
Yeah, well, look, I thought I might have burnt my bridges, given it was the same head coach this time as it was last time that asked me to be in the group. And I felt it was the right thing to do. And I really enjoyed coaching Scotland on that tour. We went to Singapore, Australia and Fiji, and it was my first opportunity, our first opportunity with the new coaching staff to work with the players. But yeah, it did cross my mind that in 4 years' time, I won't be on anybody's lists of coaching. So no, fair play to Gats. It came up in November. We went out for a meal. We chatted rugby. Obviously, I was trying to find out more about his experiences as a coach. He just finished up with the Chiefs and his time with the Lions. And from there, he asked if I'd still be or be interested this time. And yeah, with the sport of Scottish rugby, it was an easier, much easier decision now. And I think where we are with Scotland too, that this summer enables someone in our coaching group to take a more senior role. We work really collaboratively as coaches, so we all have a say in what we do, and our players take a big role in how we drive the week, drive the standards and the game plan. So it gives them more of an opportunity without me being there this summer. Mm.
Steve, you touched on how kind of, I guess, bigger an impact the players' performance from a defensive point of view has probably had on your selection. What do you think, and I guess this is probably quite broad, what do you think has been the biggest difference in Scotland's defence that has really pushed them forward this season?
I think they were all good defenders, and I think it's sometimes a little bit of a different stimulus. Just a couple of key principles, but it's trying to create belief and confidence in the system and ultimately try to enjoy defending. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but yeah, I obviously pretty passionate about it, and hopefully that rubs off on the players. And I think the way they talk about defence, I was talking to Xander now, and just how their mindset has not changed from attacking football or trying to score tries. I just think they've just enjoy it when they haven't got the ball and see it as another opportunity to get it back so we can go on the attack again. Yeah, so I think just trying to get instill in them but real belief in what they do, and they can match up to anyone in the world. And I think they're starting to believe that. And then you gain a little bit of confidence, and they've got the physicality and the attitude. And yeah, that's probably more about it. There's little bits of technical detail in things, but I think a lot of it is about buy-in. And in fairness to them, when I first came in, they asked really good questions in around a couple of systems or a couple of tweaks to the system that we were looking to do in a short space of time. I was really encouraged. And then the physicality and just as a group, they're awesome people to work with. They're great human beings. And I think we've connected really well. And I think their mindset is all about getting better and not being satisfied. They want to keep pushing. So, yeah, like I said, I'm really fortunate to have a group, to work with a group like that, the age they are as well, with some really good experienced players, some young physical guys. So, yeah, I feel really fortunate to be part of this group.
With all the opposition analysis that you've both just done, obviously with the recent kind of Six Nations, how valuable is that in terms of profiling players for potential selection, or as you say, Steve, bits of technical work that you might work with individual players, or will you have to start that process all over again from now until the tour departs, Gregor?
Yeah, well, we certainly had to watch a few games at the end there that Ireland, England I hadn't seen, because we'd already played Ireland, England, a couple of English games and Pro 14 games that weren't involving our players, Scottish players. But we watch a lot of rugby. Obviously, you watch the opposition the last three or four games before you play them, so you get a feel for why they're a good team, what their threats are. players that you wouldn't want to come up against because of their quality. So we are finishing off a lot of our reviews with the Six Nations, but Steve and I are turning our thoughts on, right, let's make sure that we get the selection right and we do justice to every player. We know our players very well in Scotland. We know and respect so many players in the other three teams, but we're going to make sure we watch players that we don't know that well and dig a bit deeper. So when it comes to May the 6th, we've enough information to pick a strongest squad as possible.
And in terms of, I suppose, the same thing, but on a team level, South Africa haven't played, obviously, since the World Cup, that have, you know, individuals playing domestic game. How difficult it is to understand what you're going to face, or because you're playing South Africa, is it actually, you know, quite, I suppose, traditional and simple, the fact that you're going to have to roll your sleeves up because it's been a massive physical challenge first and foremost, Steve? Or does it have a massive focus on these players playing the games that they are going to be playing the next few weeks just to really focus on the threat?
Yeah, I think obviously there's trends, and if they haven't been together long, will they change much? So you can probably angle in around how they're going to play. I think they're a really smart team anyway, and around kicking game, their physicality is outstanding, and they've got X-factor players as well. Like, you've got Fafi, you've got the wingers that can light stuff up. So I think there's lots of stuff that'll be trends, and I think, look, they may adapt certain things from the rules and play a little bit more rugby, but I think probably you can flip it and just think it's more about yourself. And I think I found a little bit of that when it came in. Andy Farrell was becoming head coach of Ireland, and obviously there was going to be changes made. And I think that speaking to Gregor about it, he gave me confidence just actually focus on themselves.
Yeah.
Don't worry about too much of what's coming, even though we know South Africa are going to be unbelievable, and we'll pick up trends and all the analysis available to us, we'll be doing it. But I think it gives you that a little bit more confidence just and actually more focus. Let's be the best we can be, focus on our identity and what we want to be on the tour. And then hopefully if we get everything that we want and we are clear with the way we want to attack and defend, then hopefully whatever South Africa throw at us, then we'll be prepared for.
How do you think, and I guess this is putting yourselves in the players' shoes, but maybe also having a bit of an awareness, how do you think it is for players, obviously, in the women's game, we don't have a Lions option, but obviously they know that the Six Nations has a massive influence in terms of their selection. How hard do you think it is for them to almost kind of compartmentalise that and focus on the task at hand? Do you think there is a bit of kind of some players getting distracted by that big kind of cherry on top of the cake, I guess, in the future, or is it, you know, real focus on what they're doing at task at hand and not too much thoughts into the selection and stuff like that?
I would say the games are so big in the Six Nations that the preparation so intense that you're just focused on your team's performance. I think you probably have a goal going into the Six Nations, which is maybe this year, of trying to play your best, especially when you're playing against the other competing nations, to put yourself in a good position to be in the Lions. It is something that the players are really keen to be involved in. But really, it's about how you help your team win, and that's you playing well. So that it should be the same motivation either way. I think there's the potential for distraction. So I think every single person online has picked a starting 15 or 36-man squad over the last 6 months. So if you're a player, you can maybe start to wander and think, oh, I'm in all these starting teams, I must be doing all right. Or I'm not in a starting team, I mustn't be doing very well. So, but that's like anything on social media, isn't it? You can allow it to be a distraction or something you don't take too seriously.
And Greg, I just want to come back to a point that Steve raised earlier on around the 1997 tour, you know, kind of a pivotal tour for the Lions, you know, the first in the professional era, the first tour that we actually got an inside look and a real behind the scenes look into the tour and what it meant to wear the jersey. So just a little bit on your memories of that tour and kind of how it's all kind of gone full circle now with the South African tour in 2021.
Yeah, well, look, I was obviously quite young at the time. I was about 15. No, I was early 20s, and I remember the thrill of being selected as a Lion, and that first week of getting to know different teammates, trying to train as hard as possible to win the respect of your teammates. Then when you get picked to play as well as possible, equally to win the respect of your teammates, but also to try and put yourself in a position being the test team. But that's a big driver I found as a player, was how do I win the respect of my new teammate? And that is a powerful force that you have, something I'm looking forward to seeing as a coach. You got players there that want to do their best in training, their best at games, because they have no right to be in the test team yet. This is not a team that you've played for the last 3 or 4 years and won 50 caps. Last time this team has played is 4 years ago, and a lot has changed since then. So, no, that was a big motivator. The tour was really enjoyable, but it's memorable because we won. I think you make your own enjoyment, I suppose, and the people that's on the tour help that happen. But you make friends for life. But if you win on top of that, it just becomes such a special event that you've been involved in, which on reflection is the biggest or best achievement I had in my rugby career. Maybe didn't appreciate it at the time, but as the years passed, it certainly became that in my mind.
And I guess another nice element to the story as well is that first game will be against Japan at BT Murrayfield. You know, the chance that, you know, some people don't get a chance to go on a Lions tour, but there's a real opportunity for our fans in Scotland to be part of it and watch them. Just from your guys' point of view, to have, you know, players involved in that game, but friends and family as well, and be able to share that experience to some extent when the game goes ahead in Edinburgh.
Yeah, look, I think it'll be awesome. And the fact of, obviously, coaching Scotland, being there, if we can get some family there, that'd be unbelievable. Because when I spoke to my mum and dad, telling them and things just in around it, it's like they were just over the moon in around that representation. And if anyone from the nations can get to those games, then I think it's going to be unbelievable experience. And it'll be unique to have it here and extra special for that game.
Yeah, likewise. I think we've been missing crowds. So the hope is that we can have at least, I don't know, 15, 20,000 at that game, which would seem like 80,000, given we've had no one the last 12 months. And to have it at BT Murrayfield makes it even more special. Steve lives not too far away. I'm less than an hour away as well. So I'm sure there'll be a few family and friends looking for tickets that night.
Well, it's brilliant to hear firsthand from Gregor Townsend and Steve Tandy. You know, fascinating to hear that Gregor knew back in November. I don't think I could keep that secret for a day, let alone to 3, 4, 5 months. But it just goes to show. And Steve, you know, you can hear, you know, talking very descriptive about the call and how excited he was. You forget, you know, how much it actually does mean to these people when they do get these calls, doesn't it? I mean, you know, we all know how huge the Lions is. It's probably one off, you know, comparable to the World Cup. But from a stats point of view, like, how big a tournament and occasion is this for them? You know, do you class it as kind of similar to the World Cup or above?
Oh, bigger for me. That's a pinnacle. It's the ultimate. It still is. And maybe kind of growing up near it, we grew up, and it's heightened even more because it's just such an amazing example of working together and, you know, just formalizing the best players you can possibly get to have this ultimate achievement. Maybe now, where younger fans and supporters see a lot of international rugby on TV, they see the best players in the world every weekend, really, if you've got access to different Sky TVs and cable TVs, and you're seeing, you know, kind of All Blacks and Australians and South Africans playing against the best. A lot of these players then come over here and play, and you can go and see them. But I think the Lions was the ultimate, and it still is, as far as I'm concerned. And you can hear the emotion, the pride, and the joy, and the, I suppose, a surprise in some ways to Steve, in Steve's voice, Gregor less so, because he's had more time to digest it. They'll be fiercely proud of it. Above all that, and more importantly, the total and utter deserve it of what they've achieved in their coaching careers to date, and especially in the recent past. I mean, it's a perfect example of picking on form, if you want. You know, it's something we always hear about players, but you could absolutely apply that to the coaches as well, and thoroughly deserved.
Rich, do you agree with that kind of assumption then? Like Lions above all is the pinnacle?
Yeah, I think so. And I think for players or coaches, it's that opportunity to learn from the best. I think as players, you always want to kind of push yourself to the top level you can. It's the same for coaches. And I think, you know, Dave touched on it in terms of how big an opportunity it was for him, particularly being, you know, not as kind of far along in his coaching career, to go and learn from essentially the best in the coaching world as well. So it's a very similar experience for player or for coach when they get that phone call. But it's super exciting to have such good Scottish representation, and hopefully we'll see some of our players in there as well, which will be exciting.
That's almost Gregor's coaching. A lot of Gregor's coaching philosophy and mantra is about sharing information, about trying to learn from others, helping educate others, sharing, you know, post-match, you know, detail on how they analysed opposition. I mean, he's a really open coach. And you can hear him there. I think his initial meeting, he said with Warren Gatland, was for him to learn from his experiences with the Lions previously and with the Chiefs, obviously Wales as well. So it's a brilliant opportunity for them as individuals, but it's brilliant for Scottish rugby as well, because they'll soak up all that knowledge, they'll pass on a lot of knowledge, quite rightly, to make the environment as best it could possibly be. But getting that knowledge and bringing it back is really important. I know Gregor said that as a player, that was one thing that was really important. You know, what you learn about individuals the next time you play against them was really important, but also different things you can bring back to your national setup that can maybe aid what Scotland do already, or just underline what Scotland do as good as can be. That all that stuff at the end of the tour, they won't be thinking about now, but is a real positive, and that will be multiplied with the more Scotland players we can get representation, the better.
I know you had that injury, and you mentioned it off kind of off camera before to Gregor and Steve about it, but just tell everyone how quickly that injury happened, because when you see it happened in the first minute, you think, okay, 60 seconds in, but give us all the info, Rach, because I don't think we quite appreciated just how quickly that happened.
Yeah, I think the clock said, I don't even know if it said this far, two and a half seconds. I think my immediate thought, and I know this because my teammate Emma Wassa was right next to me when it happened, was, this has got to be a joke. And the words that came out of my mouth were, are you... And it's their explicit word, kidding me. I screamed when it happened. So I think, you know, as a player, you know your body quite well by the point I am in my career, that I thought, you know, this is probably not very good. So it was a case of, get up and get through as much as I can. This is probably my tournament over. But yeah, hobbled through about 40 minutes. But by half time, I was, I think, more of a hindrance than a help. So proud of Evie coming on for a first cap as well, in quite tough conditions to put in a shift at six. So excited to see her go this week.
Now, unfortunately, there was some sad news around the game of rugby with the passing of Massimo Katita, who was a former Scotland scrum coach. Mossy, I know he is a man that you knew well, and just come to you for your take on Massimo. The tributes have been pouring in, and I just wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about Massimo.
Yeah, it's just so sad. Really, really sad. Tragic. Massimo was he was just a brilliant human being. There's been a lot said and written, yeah, since he passed at the just a few days ago, and that's because he was such a brilliant man, a lovely man, fierce competitor. I didn't play against him. He was in the front row. He just retired internationally just as I started, but got to know him really well. He came over to Edinburgh, I think, in 2005 to start coaching with a scrum coaching, and he worked with Edinburgh and Glasgow right up until about 2015. And everybody he met, everybody he worked with, would have the same opinion, that he was just the most lovely guy you could ever meet. He was brilliant for developing young talent. He gave everybody an opportunity, and like, it's just so sad. Him and his mum both caught COVID and were in intensive care in Italy, and both have have passed. I know his brother, reasonably, his twin brother, played on the wing for Italy, Marcello, who is a need to get in touch with, because he's a really kind human as well. And it's just so sad to kind of hear this. But one thing, I mean, there'll be hundreds of stories and everybody's got a story, but one thing that I've found is whether you won or lost, whether it was a big game or a perceived smaller game, he would never change. And you don't always get that with coaches. Sometimes you come off the field having been beaten heavily, being embarrassed as an international player. That happened to me a couple of times. And he would treat you the same. He would give a smile, a handshake, and have a softly spoken, quiet word. And it was brilliant. If you'd won a cup match or a knockout and a, you know, Rugby World Cup fixture, he was just exactly the same. He was a brilliant person that didn't get caught up in hysteria of emotion or anger or any of that. He was just a brilliant man. And there's a lot of young Scottish players and players around the world that benefited from his brilliant expertise as well. So it's just so sad for somebody so young at 54 to have passed. But his memory lives along because he's influenced and touched a lot of people.
Yeah, and on behalf of everybody at Scottish Rugby, our thoughts are with Massimo's family and friends. That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.